Our next item will be an informational item. Since public forum is going to be held after 1:30. So I would like to proceed with that item.
Dr. Wolf?
Yes.
I just want to note for anyone in the audience that speaker cards are in the back and they should be given to our clerk.
Thank you for the reminder. For this particular item, if anyone wanted to fill out a speaker card, this is the time to do it, and then we will close speaker cards for that item. I do not see anyone, but thank you for the reminder. Ms. Jarre? Yes.
Okay, so item 10 is an informational item to update the board on the status of the implementation of the Salinas Basin Ag Stewardship Group Replacement Water Agreement. And we have this on the agenda virtually every meeting now. Usually it resides in the EO report, but we wanted to break it out and give it a little more time this meeting. At the December board meeting, board members requested for this February meeting that the stewardship group make a presentation to the board detailing the progress of their efforts as we approach the completion of year one, and then start exploring what the scope of work would look like for year two, acknowledging that we're not at a plan yet. There's been no plan submitted here for year two, but we are at the conceptual discussion level, and to that end, we actually had a discussion yesterday afternoon in Salinas. Section Manager Angela Schroeder will provide a brief summary. Actually, I think, Angela, are you going to do a summary? Okay. And then the stewardship group, Mr. Dave Costa, will provide a brief presentation as well.
Good morning, Chair Wolf, members of the board. My name is Angela Schroeder, and I'm a supervising engineering geologist at the Water Board and also the Environmental Justice Coordinator for the region. As Mr. Robertson indicated, item 10 is to update the board on the status of the Salinas Basin Ag Stewardship Group's implementation of the Replacement Water Agreement. But before we begin, just a few reminders on the purpose of the agreement. So in April 2017, the State Water Board's Chief Deputy Director, the Central Coast Water Board's Executive Officer, and the Salinas Basin Ag Stewardship Group signed an interim replacement water agreement. The replacement water agreement required farmers and landowners to provide replacement drinking water to individuals and communities who rely on small water systems and domestic wells in the Salinas Basin that currently have unsafe drinking water due to groundwater nitrate pollution. Specifically, the agreement required the stewardship group to provide replacement drinking water to a minimum of 35 small water systems during year one. In exchange for the provision of the drinking water, the agreement enables farmers and landowners to avoid water board replacement water related enforcement. Additionally, the stewardship group successfully provides replacement water to the minimum 35 systems during year one. They would have the option to extend the agreement to a second year. As Mr. Robertson mentioned, we're working with them now to sort of scope out the concepts for a year two replacement water plan. This table reflects the replacement water agreement performance metrics described in page 2 of the staff report. Since the distribution of the staff report, the stewardship group has continued to make progress. And in a moment, Mr. David Costa of the stewardship group will provide additional details to update these numbers. One additional item that I'd like to bring to your attention is the Water Board efforts related to the 10 water systems who have declined replacement water here in line 4 of this table. The Office of Enforcement staff have initiated efforts to verify and audit these systems to confirm the reasons for their decision not to participate in the program. And the Office of Enforcement staff, Angelis Caliso, is here today. if you would like more detailed information on these efforts. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Costa and Ms. Clark of the Stewardship Group.
Thank you, members of the board and staff. My name is David Costa. I'm here on behalf of the Salinas Basin Ag Stewardship Group. With me is Kendra Clark from LNG that we work with on our program. I'm here to provide an update on our replacement drinking water efforts. And as you can see, the term of our agreement started on March 29th of 2017, so we're nearing the end of year one of our agreement. This slide shows you the structure of our group. We've got a 9-member executive committee that right now meets every other week. And at the bottom of that slide, you can see that we now have 111 members, which means that we've come a long way from our original group of 20 that we started with. Next slide. Out of those 111 members, we have 95 growers, 6 shippers, and 10 landowners, representing approximately 181,000 acres out of the 186,000 acres total that are in the Salinas Basin. It also represents 155 ag waiver numbers represented by those members, approximately 900 individual ranches. The initial group of 20 that we started with in about July of 2016, I would say, absorbed all the original startup costs, have not sought or received reimbursement for that in an effort to get this program in place. I would say our biggest challenge was when we had 20 members at the start, we didn't know if we would ever have member number 21, and we didn't know what the expenses of our program would be. So we're a lot smarter now than we were then, that we have nearly a year of experience under our belt. And we started water deliveries in May of 2017. So now that we have, a budget that's more consistent, you know, we know what our membership is. We know about what the costs of our program are running monthly, and we're better able to estimate going forward, I think. We're able to look at our assessments. And actually, already back in November, we had quit invoicing members for their assessments when it became apparent that our membership and acreage was growing at a faster rate than what we originally planned in our original budget. So it hadn't been any additional invoices since November of last year. So we've now approved our year two assessment structure. We're able to base on a year of operating history and total membership. That structure is a $500 flat charge for all members below 250 acres, and then a $4 per acre charge for every acre over 250 that an operator has. And what that results in is reduced cost for all but about 3 members of the group. So substantially on the lower acreage operators, there'd be a substantial change to their charges. Along the lines as we discuss members that apply, and I know the state also has had discussions with the hardship cases. So we have those discussions. We have one case that came before our board last week that we'll discuss again next week at our next meeting, but those are evaluated on a case-by-case basis. Usually we need some more information. We need to understand their operation a little better, their acreage and their situation, but those get handled on a case-by-case basis by the executive committee once they're brought to our attention. Again, we meet twice weekly, and actually the original group of 20 met weekly for a little over a year in order to get this started until we got to the point of water deliveries. The executive committee meetings are open for all members to attend. We distribute minutes of the meetings to members post-meeting. Approximately every quarter, we have a full membership meeting for an update to the full membership, weekly reports from CURES, our water subcontractor, to the subcommittee. We received those reports on deliveries and the individuals in receipt of those deliveries. We try to keep abreast with the trade groups to keep them abreast of our activities with our weekly update meetings. And we have, obviously, you know, responsibilities to report to this board and to the state board as needed or as requested. On the next slide, we're trying to provide, you know, updated information. We're currently delivering water to 25 systems or wells. Four of those 25, how this number differs from a slide you saw previously from Angela, was that there are 21 systems and four opt-ins through the CURES outreach to give us a total of 25. There were nine systems that where water is being provided, but not by our group, but by members of our group. And it's kind of hard to explain, but I would say that my attempt to explain is that properties that are owned or operated by SBA SG members or other owners or operators that are in the irrigated lands program. And it kind of goes back to the situation where a person has a lease for a property and there's a domestic well that's on the property on the same APN, but it's not a part of the lease. And these are kind of the wells that fall into that category. Sometimes it's a landlord that's living in that house or some situation. I think most of these probably fall into that category, and that that person either is not requiring that tenant provide that water, or that I have a situation where a landlord put in a reverse osmosis system on their well. In that situation, we require that our member provide written confirmation notices to confirm that they're supplying water or do not need to supply water for those residences that are covered by an AW number in the irrigated lands program where they're enrolled. And then those confirmation notices are provided to state enforcement for their confirmation. There are 10 systems that have declined water, and I would provide, you know, more explanation on that, in that the operators of those systems were contacted multiple times, including two mailings, multiple phone calls, and or personal visits if required. Each system operator verbally declined to participate in the program and indicated that to a CURES staff member or consultant, and all information with respect to those systems, including contact information and the facts surrounding their declining participation, has been provided to state enforcement for their follow-up. And we understood yesterday that they have followed up with at least three of those and have confirmed the declining of that participation. So our numbers, and Kendra, you can speak to the gamma wells, but we show 58 wells that we started with and 45 that were eligible for the program. So we show a total of three additional wells other than what the slide shows. Can you explain the gamma wells a little bit?
Yeah, so the gamma wells were an original. So all of these wells, the 58, were on Exhibit A.
Could you state your name?
My name is Kendra Clark, and I work at LNG Law Firm and support the SBASG with their legal matters. So, and have been the coordination with the state and Region 3 enforcement. So the original, all of these numbers are populated, if you recall, from the original Exhibit A to the settlement agreement. And so those were the 58 wells that we're originally targeting. Then there was a portion of the agreement that managed for opt-ins, where we would coordinate with outreach programs and then accept those if they met certain criteria. So, and one being financially disadvantaged, and their wells were above MCL. So you have a combination in the 25 of those two scenarios, but the 58 was the original Exhibit A, and 13 of those on Exhibit 8 were part of the GAMMA program, and those were they had confidential information, and the state enforcement removed those from the list and followed up with those separately. Now we're independently getting contacted from those that have received a letter from, I think, the Department of Natural Resources, and so with our contact information. So then they have the information about the program and can follow up with us directly.
Thank you. I just want to clarify. You referred to 58 wells from Attachment A, and we're looking at a slide that talks about 55 wells originally provided. It's a minor detail, but
right.
I want to be sure you're talking about that's the same
yes,
group?
Yes, it should be 58.
It should be 58.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the follow-up with those that are in the GAMMA program, can you give me a little bit more information about what it is they need to do or what is the communication involving?
Yeah, so when I coordinated with state enforcement, they removed the 13 GAMMA wells from the list, and subsequently the Department of Interior has sent a letter to them with CURE's contact information and information about the program and that water is available under this program. And so it's up to them, because originally their information was supposed to be kept confidential as part of the GAMMA program. And Angelise Caliso is here. She can probably expand on that a little more about the GAMMA program in general.
Good morning, members of the board. Angelise Caliso, State Water Board Office of Enforcement. I think as Ms. Clark indicated, that's correct. So we took the list of the 13 wells that were identified in the Exhibit A, and we in turn contacted the staff at the State Water Board that had initially participated or identified the GAMMA wells, the 13 GAMMA wells. And one of the things that we had come across was the confidentiality clause that had been signed between the USGS, who was the executed that the program, and the State Water Board. And so they there was some reluctance in sharing that information. And so what we agreed to was that the USGS would send a letter to those GAMMA well owners providing them information about the program and providing them with contact information should they choose to participate in the program, and that's what resulted out of that.
To date, we've received one contact. CURES has received one contact.
So you can see how that list of 58 it shrunk for us because of the GAMMA wells, and so we will start addressing those as those get released back to us as we work with information as it's provided. So from a list of 45 wells, not including the GAMMA, you can see where we've addressed 44 of them. There are still, and as the GAMMA wells come in, but, we still had, at least in the middle of January, we had three that were still considering whether to accept replacement water. There's one system that we've been unable to contact the system operator. Two properties sold, and we've received no new contact, information. We don't, know where to turn. One system was below the MCL, so we've run into that also. We've delivered a total of over 21,000 gallons to 547 individuals as of the end of January, and we haven't had any missed deliveries or complaints regarding the water service once it started in with these individuals. So that ends what I have to share.
Thank you very much, Dr. Hunter.
Thank you. And this may be something you can answer, and maybe it's more something that CURES was reporting to you, and you don't really have that detail. But I'm interested in when you say the deliveries are occurring and no complaints, which is very good to hear. But what do those deliveries look like? What form is the replacement water being provided? Is it large 5-gallon? Is it small water bottles? Or how are the full needs of a household, water needs of a household being met through these deliveries?
Well, the water deliveries are in 5-gallon bottles with a stand provided. Information provided to us, I think, through, I don't know if it's through the region or through the state on, you know, approximate water needs of a family of 2 or 3 or 5. And so it's usually kind of the starting point. And then once the service starts, then the evaluation continues from there on whether that's an adequate amount of water or whether it's too much or not enough. And I think that's, you know, the normal protocol for cures as it is for us as an individual on our irrigated lands properties.
So I don't know if staff has more information from cures about how they are determining what the correct ratio is, and is there still are there still challenges associated with full water needs? Because we all know almost every, I don't know, maybe half your rooms have water coming out of the, half the rooms in a household, in a small house, would have a water system, you know, installed, and you're using it for other things besides just drinking. So how are we looking at that?
Angela Schroeder, Central Coast Water Board. So it's my understanding from CURE is that the vendor they're using is Culligan. So it's, it's a very standardized process that Culligan implements, and, you know, for all of their clients. And I believe, honestly, they start with 2 5-gallon bottles for each residence, and basically they rely upon the residents to indicate to them if there's an additional water need, and it's the simple, you know, you put your used water bottle out, and then Culligan comes and replaces them. And it's my understanding from CURE that there have not been any issues. Some of the families have, you know, 3 a week, and it's just based upon the need and their communication to Culligan.
And I might add, too, that the deliveries are once every 2 weeks.
So, Mr. Young.
Thank you, Dr. Wolf. So I'm not sure who can answer this, but I'll just throw it out there. I'd like to know more about the 10 systems that are declining to provide replacement water. Does this mean that they're treating their water now such that it will meet drinking water standards, or are they continuing to provide contaminated water, or what? What's happening?
I'll take a stab at trying to answer that. Angeles Calisa with the State Water Board Office of Enforcement. So as part of our audit that we did, we knew that that was going to be a concern for this board, the system's declining to participate, and then the reasoning behind their reason for not joining the program. So CURES and the stewardship group provided a list of the 10 systems along with their contact information for the 10 systems, including the explanations and the type of outreach that they did for each individual system. I personally called all 10 of those systems in late January of this year, and I was able to speak to 3 of the 10 systems that we had. Of those 3, one indicated that they had a treatment system in place. They did not elaborate on the system that they had in place for that. The others indicated that they were looking at either doing a new well or looking at another funding mechanism to treat the water, but they did not want to participate in the program. And I'd explained the concept of the program, what it entailed. They still were reluctant. They were not very forthcoming and open in providing information about their reasoning for joining the group. They just felt that they had been purchasing. What one of the 3 told me is they had been buying bottled water this whole time. So to them, this was no change, and they prefer to continue doing that on their own terms. So I left a contact information for all the other 7 that I was not able to reach, and as of yesterday, I have not heard from any of them. I'd be happy to follow up again with the systems that have not responded. But again, the ones that I was able to speak to were either had some sort of treatment indicated, didn't specify what, they already were purchasing water, they did not want to join and participate in the program, And so that would be the extent of my communication with those three.
So when was this? Did you say January is when you
When I called them is January 23rd, 2018.
So this is towards the end of the one-year period.
Correct. This was an audit because we knew there was a concern. So the stewardship group previously had done outreach to this systems along with the other 42 that were in Exhibit A. So the stewardship group had done several mailings and contacts, and they had also engaged a consultant to reach out to some of the systems they had not been able to reach through before. And so it's not like there hadn't been an attempt to contact them all between the initial beginning of the program in April until January when we did a follow-up with those systems.
And I can see that. I'm just kind of a little surprised that after a year we've got seven that really have not been contacted.
I can clarify that for you because they have been contacted. So CURES, they were part of the original Exhibit A list. So every person on Exhibit A, every system on Exhibit A is contacted at least twice via mail and then at between two and six times via voice calls.
Okay. And by contacted, I meant an exchange of information.
Yes. So in the mail, initially, there was information about high nitrates in your water, an information package, information about the program, and an application. So, and that happened twice to all of the systems on Exhibit A. So that was the mail contact, and then there's follow-up between, you know, if someone emphatically said no on the second call, they wouldn't keep calling, we put them on the list. But if they didn't respond or didn't communicate or took a couple more calls, some were thinking about it for a period of time, they were contacted between two and six times. Okay. Already by CARES. And in some instances, there was personal visits where we had information and how to get to there.
So of those seven, do we have what is their position on participating? We know that those seven have decided we're not going to opt in for this.
Yes. If they were on the list of 10 that declined, they have emphatically declined and actually told us that they did not want to participate. So Angelus, her contact was essentially for a verification of their status on that list.
Okay. So that means then they're not part of the agreement and can then be subject to an enforcement proceeding? I thought that was...
No, I don't believe so.
That was
no.
In a slide that if you participate in this settlement, the Water Board will not...
That's institute. With respect to growers, with respect to farmers. With respect to water systems, they have the option to be served with water or not to.
Okay.
But in terms of metrics, if it's determined that the stewardship group does adequate effort to contact and they meet refusal, that still counts ultimately. Our obligation as a state, both as the Regional Board and State Water Board, is to validate, to audit, and that's essentially what Angelis has done here, is to try to understand, verify that refusal of water is occurring, and then try to dig in and understand why. Is there an impediment here that we're not aware of that might be inhibiting them accepting this opportunity, such that we can address it in the program? So that answer your question?
It does. And so okay. I confused the two potential groups of people, growers versus actual owners of water systems. So then where does that leave this small group of water suppliers that don't want to participate? Do we going to follow up with
I would recommend that we, for the seven that have not, there's a subgroup here of 10. For the seven that we haven't really made audit connection with, I would say that we continue to try that. At the parties involved with the agreement, that would be the stewardship group, the State Water Board's Office of Enforcement, and myself, the regional board. We're in dialogue right now trying to understand how can we create an opportunity to get water, safe drinking water, in a way that doesn't require those who are resistant to identifying themselves, that offers them access to that safe drinking water. What we're learning is there's a resistance to providing information or to interacting perhaps with the government on some level, given the climate, so to speak. And so we're trying, the three parties are having a dialogue to try to understand, well, maybe a service station, you know, kind of a fill-up station kind of opportunity. Trying to develop a strategy to deal with this resistance that we perceive is out there. I think the more we delve into the seven and try to understand what's going on there and have a dialogue with those seven, as well as what Angelis has done with the other three in the group of ten, we might gain a better understanding of what the resistance is to accepting
bottled water. If I may just augment a little bit, you know, Mr. Robertson proposed solutions since I was at the meeting with the stewardship, and that's what triggered some of these conversation. Is, you know, I had proposed perhaps having a neutral area that does not require someone to provide, you know, very specific identification questions, but a good point that was raised by the stewardship, that there are some folks who says, oh, I want to have, you know, bottled water, and that's because they don't like the chlorine smell of municipal water they get. So how to differentiate the address so that it doesn't put the stewardship in a situation to provide replacement water to folks who are actually able to get, you know, municipal water. And so that was to be continued in how to come up with, you know, a solution that would, you know, satisfy all these constraints.
And in yesterday's meeting, we had further discussions along that line, and I think the State Water Board Office of Enforcement has a little homework that they want to do to research some existing potential solutions around the state to combat what Dr. Wolf raised of, for lack of a better term, people cheating into the system that just don't like their city water flavor. There's an analogous situation of literally card fueling stations, I think, that it is a possible solution. You know, you have to have a card to get something out of this, and cards can be handed out instead of bottled water. And then you can access the water using the cart. That doesn't preclude, again, cheating from happening. It just makes it harder. And I don't want to say that that's the panacea. That's an example of an idea that is being considered.
Can I ask, of the 7 to 10 systems, about how many people do we estimate are drinking water off of those systems? Do we have a number?
Difficult for us to determine because we get that information off their application, and when they haven't been forthcoming with an application, we don't have an idea of how many are in the residence. But typically, residence has been, you know, they vary from 2 to, you know, 12 people, as many in a residence, what we're delivering today.
But do you have numbers on each of these applications? Because we don't have applications.
We don't have applications
to begin with, so we just have no idea. So, I mean, my concern would simply be that we figure out kind of quickly how to get to trying to solve this problem if there are people that are drinking water that they shouldn't be drinking, then we ought to be doing everything we can to cut through that, because that's the public health issue here. And, you know, a lot of our discussion after a year is kind of this bureaucratic mumbo-jumbo that we go through with complicated issues, but I would just like to focus our attention on that group here is at risk.
I believe at the county health department level, which was the basis for the exhibit in the agreement, it just refers to the number of connections in the system and not the number of individuals that are being served. If I had one other bit of information I wanted to share with you, you know, regarding, you know, outreach and opt-ins, in the middle of January, we had 62 pending applications through the various outreach programs, both of CURES and through the state program. So as an example of what we run into in trying to evaluate people who are requesting water, out of those 62, 31 were served by a public water system, 7 were under the MCL, another 7 were on either irrigated land properties or properties that belong to a stewardship group member, which would be handled outside of the stewardship group program, and 5 were outside of the basin. So that's, sometimes when you wonder, oh, how come it takes so long from an application to delivery or all the evaluation, it's an example of what we run into, I guess, out in the field as we start paying visits and requesting information. And that's one of the reasons why you need information when somebody comes with an application from an opt-in.
Is there a common explanation for why somebody who is receiving municipal water would want to get replacement water through this program?
I don't know the answer to that. Perry from CURES could answer that. Usually it's, I don't like how it tastes or okay. something right. About that.
And in some cases, if I may interject, you know, rumors in regard to the level of quality of water from municipal water, this is an item, without going too much detail, we've been made aware recently that, you know, city water quality is not up to standard, and sometimes these false rumors then tend to be difficult to prevent or reverse.
In certain instances, we've also found people just don't know where their water is coming from.
So, Ms. Gray, and I'm going down the aisle here.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot to bring forward, but I do appreciate Board Member Young's focus on the 10, and hopefully we can get them, you know, sort of into some sort of a system. But I appreciate all the work that you have done, Angelis, and both of you to get this moving forward. And it's certainly never as easy as it seems. So thanks for the diligence.
Mr. Johnston?
I have a couple comments and a couple of questions. I live in a rural area outside the city of Watsonville, and I am on city water. And many of the people in the area around me on Green Valley Road are on city water, and I would suspect a lot of people don't know, particularly if they're renters, whether they are or not on city water. And there's actually a little store down the street from me that has a water dispensing machine that just basically connects into the city water and puts a filter on it, and I see lines of people there. And I think some of it is, and the city of Watsonville has gone to some real expense to promote to people on the city water system the fact that, in fact, that water is safer than much of the bottled water sold in this country. But it's tough. And there's a cultural piece of it, too. A lot of people have come from Mexico or other parts of Central America where there is limited confidence in the quality of municipal water and more confidence in the quality of water that comes out of a filtration machine. So I have a question. This, I'm looking at the 25, 9, and 10, the receiving replacement water, the ones that are on ag land, and the ones that are declining water. So those numbers are numbers of wells, correct?
Actually, no. So out of the systems and wells currently receiving replacement water, 21 are systems off of the Exhibit A, and 4 of those are individual wells that were opt-ins.
Okay. So how many, can you tell me how, so when we talk about connections, my understanding is connections refers to the number of either residences or businesses that are on a system. How many connections do the 25, 9, and 10 each represent? Do we know that? Or have a rough idea at least?
I would say we know how many connections. I don't have it with me, and I'm sure Kendra doesn't. I don't know if it was in the attachment,
yeah,
in the agreement, but it should have been referred to, I would think, in the original attachment.
Yeah, if you could give me a rough idea.
Yeah, so you'll see from the slide we have 547 individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And 106 businesses are provided as of January. So if for the individuals, if a household can range from, 2 or 1 to 12, it's a division of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the...
I never had that information, but I can get that.
Yeah, so that's, I'm guessing then, those 25... systems, maybe, which is the 547 and the 106 are all in the 25, that's probably somewhere in the range of maybe 100 houses and 100 businesses. And do we have any idea for the 10 systems declining water, how many connections those represent? I'm trying to figure out if that's 10 households or 100 households. I don't have any idea.
They're systems. Those are 10 systems. So, and again, without them completing an application, it's very difficult for us to know how many people and systems that are on each of those.
I would suspect. I would suspect that the county health department has to know as part of their process whether they're falling in a category, even just in general terms of 2 to 5 connections or 6 to 15.
Yeah, but for all of the 10 that declined, a representative from the SPASG and CURES went to the county health department to garner additional information and see if they could target the individual systems, and there was no additional information available.
Okay. So when we talk about those 10 systems, when we talk about contacting them and them declining, if that's let's say that's a well that has a half a dozen houses on it, or a system that has a half a dozen houses on it, we've talked to the owner of the system. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So we're not necessarily dealing with the end of the pipe then.
Yeah, and that was our concern. And that they are declining water on behalf of others who may not understand.
Okay, so it isn't a case of not leading the horse to water but not being able to make them drink, because the in at least some of these cases, maybe some of these are just one well, one house,
yeah,
and we're actually talking to the affected people, but
right,
in others we're talking to people who are then declining for others.
Exactly, and that is why we got enforcement involved to see, mm-hmm, and also why we went to the county health department to garner additional information as well.
Okay. This is helpful to understand where it is, and I totally understand why the stewardship group would not want to set up an open dispensing thing to provide water to the whole city of Soledad. But I just wonder if I like the concept of setting up maybe some sort of a card lock system if we can identify the households that are on the that are on these systems, and simply being able to mail the households directly something that would give them access to that without having to show anything further, because I also understand that the factors. It's ICE was arresting people in Watsonville yesterday. It's a time that people are very, very concerned about their contacts with government, and I get that. And frankly, they're concerned about not wanting to piss off their landlords too. Thank you.
So I believe Ms. Mayor Delgado had also a comment before that. For the record, Mr. Delgado has been present since 9:40 this morning and has been very attentive to this item.
Thank you, Chair, for those kind words.
You're welcome.
David, thanks for all the work you've done. Is it Kendrick or Kimberly? Kendrick, thank you for helping David out. So those that are receiving replacement water, like you said, through Culligan, how do they deal with bathing, dishwashing, garden hoses out back, you know, where children may not know the difference or children get thirsty and they might just go for the garden hoses? You know, is that a concern of anyone, or are there reasons why that's not a concern?
The agreement as contemplated did contemplate a drinking water and a system to address replacement drinking water. So that has been our focus. And then it's also our hope that the educational materials that are passed on with the application and the opportunities to learn about the issue of nitrate in water will stop the other uses, and making the drinking water available and being part of the program.
Do we have any information about follow-through? Are there questions asked at any occasion to the people receiving replacement water? So how are you dealing with the garden hoses? So how do you work it out with the bathing to make sure that your children, you know, aren't drinking this? Is there any kind of back-and-forth communication on those other issues that don't relate to the Culligan water provision?
Good morning, Angeles Galiz, Office of Enforcement. I think one of the topics or the areas that hasn't been brought up on for this program, and an effort that I personally have undertaken with the assistance of the Office of Public Participation at the State Water Board, is outreach, an outreach component to the basin to make people aware of the opportunity of the program. And we were particularly targeting domestic well owners. So CURE's efforts through the implementation of their program was targeting the 58 systems that were identified in Exhibit A of the agreement. And Office of Enforcement with the Office of Public Participation undertook the additional step of reaching out to the community, reaching out to churches. I have personally been down here on many, many occasions since the program began, doing sign-up events at the church, attended WIC clinics, distributing material through the different resources, Monterey Public Health, essentially just disseminating the information so that residents that may not have been targeted or have received the information through CURE's mailings for the 58 water systems could also have the opportunity to participate in this program. And so resulting from that, what we have received is, out of all those efforts that we have undertaken over the last few months, we have had four residences that have signed up, as we're calling opt-ins. So these are domestic well owners. In this case, it was four residences that were served by one well that was exceeding nitrates. There were several others that were also contacted, and their well was tested, but their water that was tested did not exceed the MCL, so it did not qualify for the program. And we continue to do follow-up with additional inquiries that come in. We have a toll-free line, an email, and material that has been distributed has been done in both English and Spanish.
So I can understand that your brief summary, behind your brief summary, there's a lot of work, a lot of phone calls, traveling. But in my vision, I see 547 people using Culligan and outreach at churches, et cetera, which is a lot of work. So I'm trying to connect these two pictures in my brain. Is there any outreach going to the 547 individuals to find out how they're dealing with their lifestyle needs and keeping their people safe from the drinking water?
I would say in that aspect of it, that would be CURE's follow-up to determine their to look at how they're using the water. I mean, when we've had contacted the residents and we explained the program, we made it clear that the program was intended to replace drinking water and cooking and other uses primarily. And so the 547 that are currently part of the program, I would say those have primarily come in through the outreach, the systems that are served by CURES. And I would say we could certainly do follow-up with those residences to determine and to do additional education on the uses of for the current portable water that they may have and then the replacement water that they're receiving.
And Mr. Delgado, just one more part of the follow-up. In contrast, as you might recall from the Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program, we require both posting as well as notification. And one of the things we do require, for example, in Spanish and English, is posting at the spigots outside the house. And so this is a challenge that we're continuing to try to address. It's something we could consider talking to the stewardship group about their outreach. I do want to remind the board that for the replacement water plan that's due in year two, a big component of that is an outreach and education program for the entire Salinas Basin area, which requires outreach and education related to both the public health risks of nitrate as well as the opportunity to participate. So these are all things that we could consider for year two. The outreach that Angeles has been able to do as part of the Office Enforcement and also with the Office of Public Participation, I do really want to recognize that that has been completely on the Water Board's resources, and really we're subsidizing a great amount of outreach to the stewardship group to assist in that way.
Thank you, Angela. I want to ask Angeles, is to Angela's point, is that sustainable for the Offices of Enforcement, and should we shift our strategy here if it's not?
I would say it's not. I mean, I really do think that the best and effective, it's been difficult being in Sacramento and having to make contacts with the residences and not being here locally. That has been a challenge through our outreach efforts that we have done. I look forward to, and I think part of this second year discussions with the stewardship group, I think one of our things that I like to focus in as well is having a third party or local assistance that can help and provide some of that outreach component where we can certainly assist, but obviously being a one or two person team from the Sacramento definitely has challenges in reaching the community. So having the presence locally will definitely go a long ways.
My only comment now, and this will be the end, is that you've Angeles and David and others have done a lot of good work, and as any new rollout system comes, you try to take care of the most important thing first, and I think the drinking and the cooking, getting them that water, that's what we've all said that that's been the top priority. So now as we go into the future, we sort of drill down a little bit and see, before we walk away patting ourselves completely on the back and saying goodbye in any fashion, that we look at these other potentials, such as, you know, that they're still ingesting this water in other ways, that maybe the spigots aren't all signed, maybe the signs fall over or go away after a little while. My colleague, Mr. Johnson, just passed me a note talking about perhaps Culligan providing bilingual education. And probably turns out that maybe Culligan delivery people are the ones who have the most contact and the most knowledge and maybe the most trust over time with these 547 individuals. So maybe there is some conduit that they can provide for information to help us know at least that the information is regularly getting to them about these other less than highest priority matters that may be falling through the cracks. Thank you.
So a comment and shifting a little bit the conversation to, the looking back after 1 year, I think the stewardship needs recognition for its efforts, because you started with basically no structure, no organization, and had to build something from ground up. And, it's easy to look back and say, well, we could have done this and this, but there was a lot of learning. I would suggest also that the efforts and the progress made didn't happen by osmosis. And I'm not referring to reverse osmosis here. You do have a board that has done a lot of the heavy lifting to bring this to success. So could you comment on the level of volunteerism that has been done by your board to bring this program to where it is today?
Well, like I said, it started in about July of 2016. Our water delivery started in May of 17, but we've got a 9-member board that met every week for probably an hour and a half every week, just officially in a meeting, aside from all the other little pieces that, you know, that took time during the week and trying to get organized. I mean, we've got, you know, in particular, you know, one person, it's company that his employer, you know, gave him the leeway to spend probably 5 or 6 hours a week, you know, on this effort. I did that for a long time. We're trying to figure out how to help him do what he's been trying to do, but it was all in the effort of, you know, the startup and the greater good and the mission to do what, you know, a lot of people thought was right. And you know, I think that just about all, I mean, the original board maybe was about 7, you know, in that first year, and I believe that they're all still there. We've added a couple others as you know, members had joined and had interest in being on that board. So it's been a lot. So now at a minimum, if you're going to every meeting, it's an hour and a half every other week. Besides getting there and getting back to your whatever the rest of your day entails.
Getting back to farming. So my other last question I have is, could you comment on the internal level of transparency that you have with your members, you know, to share with them openly, you know, some of your accounting costs, etc. So that way your members don't have a perception of, well, we're writing checks here, but we have no idea where the money is going. So would you mind elaborating on that?
Well, I would say that I think that we probably write checks to three different places, you know, week in and week out, or month in and month out, and once for the water delivery, you know, one's for the legal counsel and structure and the people that kind of are taking applications and working through things and handling that side. And the third one was to Cures, to the, you know, our subcontractor on the water side. And that's really, you know, the extent of it. We I mentioned earlier in my comments that we disperse, you know, some of the minutes of the executive committee meetings. When we've had membership meetings approximately every quarter, I mean, those are open to everybody. They're announced. There's a few that call in on the phone, so they're accessible. We discuss finances. We discuss, you know, meetings and things with state board and regional board and kind of the state of the union, I guess. And I would add that at the last one, which was, I don't know, early part of December or sometime, there wasn't one question that was asked about anything finance related or anything related to that. And there was, you know.
Thank you.
All of the 9 executive committee members are, you know, well-known farmers in the area. And so they can be contacted at any time. And I think you often do foster communications and contacts with members. And so now that we have 111 members, there's our the executive board is geographically diverse, commodity diverse, and there's typically someone in each person's industry that is a member of the board. And recently, last week, we had a request from a member to come to an executive committee, provided them all the meeting dates and times. We're absolutely open to, they're absolutely open to that.
Thank you for that clarification, Mr. Robinson.
I was going to ask make a comment, but it might be phrased better as a question. I've had the opportunity to have quite a few dialogues with the stewardship group and Mr. Costa and others. You haven't mentioned, and I found it interesting, that of the original, I think it was 19, a significant portion of that was not under Office of Enforcement orders, leveraging them into this agreement. They were actually doing it out of perception of value to the greater community here. You know, they didn't have anything in the fight, so to speak, and yet they're still saying, hey, we should form a group. Could you speak just a little bit to that?
Well, sure. I think that probably describes about half of the members of our original 20 in the stewardship group. Generally, there's been, a shipper, a produce shipper, and then there's two of them that come to mind in our group, but they lined up at the forefront and said, we want to be a part of this effort. You know, we want to make sure that, you know, if our growers are choosing not to be involved, that we are involved on behalf of our acreage, that, you know, somebody grows for us. And they just wanted to make sure that they were part of the solution. And sometimes it probably meant that they might have, you know, paid for an acre that a grower ultimately paid for, you know, besides, but they were just convinced that it was a good effort, that it was appropriate, needed to be done, and they wanted to be, you know, part of the solution.
I'm going to ask, how popular were you at the start amongst your own population?
Maybe not very. And it still happens now a little bit, I'd say. There's still a few out there that just don't agree with, you know, the effort, and, you know, they're going to choose to do what they're going to do, but... You know, when we started, in terms of my family's business, and I think a lot of the others that are in the group, we just thought it was a better use of time and resources to be involved in this effort versus, just this kind of thing.
So I asked that half because I knew it was kind of funny, but also popularity isn't a good measure here. I think on slide 3 of the presentation, the number 181,000 member acres versus 186,000 total basin acres. So that's like 98% of the total basin. So might not have been popular, but you're pretty darn effective at getting everybody into the club that is providing replacement water. And I think that's actually a much more accurate measure, effectiveness.
So at this time, you know, I'm going to ask my colleagues for any parting questions or thoughts that you have. I will start on my right with Dr. Hunter.
Thank you. And I am happy to see the community development of this. I think that is the most important thing, that well, the Office of Enforcement and State Water Board initiated communication about a problem and let the landowners and the growers and the industry form in its own way an organization and a process and a system to begin to resolve the problem. One of the issues I'm aware of, and I think you spoke to this, Mr. Costa, is kind of leveling out the cost factors and the unknown about that, and back to the volunteerism, you know, stepping up to the plate, the original set, contributing a fairly large amount. And over time, though, by November, the assessment of the finances of the group allowed for the ceasing invoicing. I'm sure it's going to be continue to be assessed over time. But nevertheless, in our packet was a letter from Ms. Silkwood addressing some of the inequities that were initially perceived. I don't know that they were actual, but at least there was a perception of that. And I do acknowledge that you mentioned that hardship, there is a process for hardship consideration, which is also important because in coastal farming we know so many of the operators are really small scale operators. So that's an important element. I'm glad to see that is also now become part of the operation of your group. So do you feel that the Silkwood letter identified issues that your group took up and responded to, or was it more that as the group grew and the cost factors started to become better defined, et cetera? I mean, there's probably a balance in there somewhere, but do you feel that Ms. Silkwood's issues were legitimate, and do you feel now that you're on a path towards the equity she was concerned about?
I think the path that we took, you know, started substantially prior to any letter you received, and I know that, you know, you received a letter, you know, in response to Ms. Silkwood's letter, you know, kind of one of the challenges, I mean, not one of the challenges, but the reality is that, you know, whether an operator is small or large, it takes the same amount of time to get them a K-1 for all the accounting purposes. I mean, there's a lot of things that are, in terms of, you know, costs that are very similar, whether you farm 100 acres or 1,000 acres. So, you know, there at some point isn't it, you know, an economy of scale, you know, but not always. But I think that, you know, just the effort to, you know, be looking at things that were mentioned in a letter, you know, in December. I mean, I think that if she was aware of or her clients or whoever, if they were aware of you know, where we were and what we were doing and how we were contemplating, you know, working our way, you know, down the road in the future, I'm not sure that letter ever would have been written. I think that we answered, you know, most of that in the response that was sent just a few days later by Mr. Harrell.
So, did Ms. Silkwood, do we know how many individuals Ms. Silkwood represented in this communication? Because it was issued toward the end of the year, so as you pointed out.
I don't know how many that represented.
So we don't know if this was just a few individuals or. I did see the response, and I appreciate. I think for me, it's more a matter of changes that are occurring over time in your first startup year, and so I guess I wanted to know from your perspective if you felt that the smaller operators are not carrying an unfair share of the cost of this water delivery program.
Well, no, I'm not saying that they're not, you know, carrying their share. It's just, you know, when we started, we didn't expect that there would, well, for one thing, we didn't know there would be over 100 members. We didn't know what size of any future members would be. So we set a structure for the structure that we knew. Like I said, we didn't know if we would have a 21st member, let alone a 111th, you know, member. So you can only work with kind of the information you have at hand and your best, you know, estimate of what's in front of you. And then as the unknowns become knowns, then you start to make, you know, make your adjustments. And I think that's, you know, what we've done. And I think that was our goal. And I think that started, you know, way before you ever received a letter.
Okay. And, you know, I do take note that your comment about reassessing the cost factors and ceasing invoicing in November. And I'm guessing this letter was in the works before that even started. So it's dated December 6th, so it may be that the gap there in details and stats on those cost factors were even changing as this letter was being drafted.
Right, I don't know. I can't speak to when the letter was drafted, but you know, we've mentioned when you know, when we ceased assessments, because it was obvious that you know, water deliveries, you know, was the cost of, you know, water being delivered was, you know, a different. I mean, we, you know, you estimate worst case scenario on the cost, and you estimate, you know, worst case scenario if the membership never grows. So you start down that road, and you know, there will be a point in time that, you know, we'll start, you know, invoicing, you know, assessments again. But I mentioned, you know, one of the slides, it's at a you know, a very different rate, which we think is, you know, most definitely, you know, meant to address, you know, small operators and have, you know, an entirely, you know, scaled rate, you know, per acre, so that there wouldn't be, you know, any, you know, potential inequity. And I guess the point I'm trying to make is, you know, those types of conversations in our group, you know, started way before December the 6th.
Right. So do you think, oh, go ahead.
point to make regarding the assessments is that, you know, all of the members of the executive committee are members of the community. And this was never function, and the thought behind this was never a money-making venture. The operating agreement, which I've provided to any member that has requested it or prospective member, actually states that all extra monies will be returned to members. So there is just no function. It's a limited liability company. It's owned by the members, so there's no function to keep revenue. It belongs to the members.
So one last question, and this I just want to know from your perspective, Mr. Costa, being longstanding farmer, and I think considering the reality of sustaining this program, do you feel that the way the system is designed and the supporting effort of CURES and the contract with Culligan and all the components of this replacement water process, do you feel that this is sustainable, that it's a realistic approach, and that the growers are going to be able to continue to sustain this cost?
Well, I think that members joining are joining based on the fact that it's an interim solution to a long-term problem, and the long-term fix is something different than what we're doing. So I think that we're trying to, bridge, from here to there. I mean, I think that's much of the basis that a member would join on. I mean, this isn't a group that's going to be, installing pipelines from one community to another and things like that. Those are, bigger projects with bigger needs that need, different buy-ins and contributions. So I think the fact that, that this is, interim, that you're really just looking at it as trying to get to some point while, we as a, community and all of us in the room and in Sacramento too, figure out what is the equitable long-term solution, not just regionally, but, statewide where the same issue exists.
So as far as sustainability to staff, are you going to comment? Are you planning to comment on the year two status of year two? Because I know there were conditions that had to be met, and how are we interpreting those conditions? It sounds like we may need to revise some of the numbers, and in order to continue to go forward. From what I've heard, it sounds like we've been very effective at accomplishing some significant steps. So how do we see year two?
Angela Schroeder, Central Coast Water Board. So we are, it's February 2018. Year two would be to begin in beginning of April of this year. The staff report metrics that we reported were in advance of receiving these new numbers, so we'll be working with the stewardship group to evaluate progress. They've indicated sufficient numbers of systems to meet the option to go on to year two. So we'll work with Office Enforcement and review those. And we're also already engaging in conversations, as John mentioned, with the stewardship group to scope out potential improvements that can be made as part of a year or two replacement water plan. And we can definitely bring that back to the board sometime in the future.
Okay, so I see one last comment from Mr. Johnson.
Thank you. I've spent most of my working life working with farmers and food, the agricultural and food processing industry, sometimes in conflict with farmers and food processors, sometimes in cooperation. And I just have a couple of observations. I mean, any observation you try and make about a whole group of people is limited in its applicability and its universality, but there's definitely a cultural thing among farmers that you might sort of verges on libertarianism. They're individuals. They're all competing with each other. They are really kind of always on the verge of financial success or failure, and at the mercy of things beyond their control. And my experience has been it makes them very cautious dealing with government and regulation, first. And second, very cautious in how they cooperate and share information with their competitors in their own industry. And I think there's a second observation that I'm not the first to note about farmers, particularly multi-generational farmers, seeing themselves as stewards of the land, and despite the fact that every single year they're challenged with whether their business is going to be able to succeed and continue, depending on the market and the weather, that this leads to a certain openness to looking at the long term, too, in terms of their land, the land and the industry. And I think it's really notable here that second thing has kind of overcome the first thing, the view of being stewards and that overall social responsibility, you know, has really pushed people to both work with us in ways that are not always easy and to work with each other in ways that aren't always easy. I don't want to, you know, say mission accomplished here, because as Mr. Costa noted, you know, we're not that far down the road here. But I want to particularly thank you, Dave, and the other people on the board who were willing to put a ton of work in and stick your necks out on this for the work you've done. We are, you know, we're still kind on the first step of the first step, because this is a short-term solution to the short-term part of the problem, which is drinking water. You know, we need longer-term solutions to that, and the fundamental solution is to find ways to have a vibrant agricultural industry on the Central Coast that does not keep pushing up nitrate levels in the groundwater. You know, that's a huge challenge that we all face. And finally, despite the fact that there have been some hiccups on the way between the state and Department of Enforcement and the region in terms of how we all work together on this, I think that the way that we sort of move from a coalition of the willing to, that had sufficient base to start to move something to using, a combination of persuasion and our enforcement powers to really grow that group is something that has really worked, and I think everybody gets some credit for that. So I think we're not there, but this is some pretty significant stuff. And thank you.
So I, you know, in concluding this item, my view is that the very inception of this stewardship group, most of the initial dialogues were with the Office of Enforcement. This has morphed itself successfully to a very close dialogue and open dialogue with the Regional Water Quality Control Board, which I think is where it needs to go. Having participated at this stewardship meeting recently in our regional board office, I have to say that seeing the openness of all your colleagues was impressive to me, because, any question we asked, there was no pause of trying to formulate a politically correct answer. You were very open and very candid on your answers. So, to me, that shows a healthy organization. And then lastly, I think the issues of budgets, et cetera, we need to understand and realize that when you start from ground zero a business, although this is an LLC, not for profit, I don't know anyone in this room who has a business where you started developing a budget plan and at the end of a year you were 100% correct. If you have done that, let me know, because I'll hire you, for my own business. But, the point is that I think there was a lot of learning. There was some risk-taking. So the numbers initially and how they look today are quite different, but that's normal. That's part of the embryonic stage of a startup in a business. And, you know, unlike dot-coms, you know, the money had to come from the wallet of, you know, all the willing farmers in this particular instance. So that's kind of my wrap-up of observation. And again, I want to thank, you know, your willingness to come here and being ready to give us a good update. And I think it's work in progress. You know? So thank you very much for that. So I would like to, you know, now close this item. Do you have any parting comment, Mr. Robertson?
Just two. First, I want to say thank you. Thank you to the board and the membership. Appreciate the journey right now that we're on. You know, it's significant. Second, I want to reassure this board that we will be continuing regular report outs. We're in kind of at least two transitions right now from year one to year two, and there's a work plan that comes with year two, and that's we've started the cooking of that collectively. And then also the unmentioned Senate Bill 623, if and when it comes along, that will have to integrate here somehow. That's a high level of complexity there that I do not want to talk about now. I just want to be aware of there's a lot more complexity out there, too. So, and we will continue to bring this. I'm going to ask the stewardship group also continue to participate in that regular communication with the board.
Right. So thank you very much. And I would like to, at this time, take a break and reconvene at, let's make it 11:15. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.